All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So we are picking up Daf Kuf Yud Beis 112, the top line of Adda Bar Abba. So we'll say thank you to Moshe Abramson for giving the shir yesterday. And let's begin. Rav Adda Bar Abba, Masli Bahadra Bar Hama Ahad. So we'll say, remember again, we're discussing some very beautiful and interesting sugyas. In yesterday's Daf, we had the statement of Rai Bar Hama. Rai Bar Hama said, Rishus Yoresh Ki Rishus Lokeach. That when someone inherits something, so inheriting an object is the equivalent of purchasing the object. That just like when you purchase an object, the object undergoes that shinui rishus, allows the lokeach, the purchaser, to own it. So too, again, when someone inherits something, so that becomes their property as well. So says the Gemara, So Rav Adda Bar Ava, he went ahead and he said that Rami Bar Chama's statement applied to the following braisa. So remember again, the Rami Bar Chama, the Gemara wanted to originally apply Rami Bar Chama's statement to the Mishnah. The Mishnah's case is, Reuven steals from someone, goes ahead and gives it to his kids, he dies, so the Mishnah said that the children, the heirs, are potter from paying back the stolen items. Rami Bar Chama wanted to suggest that this shows you that being yoresh something is the equivalent of purchasing it. Therefore, again, the heirs have no obligation of repayment. So Rav Adda Bar Ava Masli L'Hod Rami Bar Chama Aho, so Rav Adda Bar Ava wanted to go ahead and attach the statement of Rami Bar Chama to the following braisa. Hiniach lahen avien ma'o shel ribis. Listen to this case. So let's say again, Reuven lent money with ribis. He lent money with interest. He collected the interest, and then he died. So he left the interest money ultimately to the heirs. Afa pishiyodin shein shel ribis. Even though the children know that this is prohibited, illegal funds of interest. Ein chayav lahachzir. They are not obligated to return the monies. Rabbi Chama said, why is that? Zosomeres, Rishus Yoresh, Kirishus Lokeach Dami. Because the Rishus of a Yoresh, obviously when you inherit something, so inheriting something is the equivalent of purchasing it. Therefore, the children are considered to be the purchasers, so to speak, and there is no obligation to return the ribis funds. Rava Amar Rava said, the Olam Eimalacha, Rishus Yoresh, Lav Kirishus Lokeach Dami. Rava will argue, and Rava will say, no, inheriting something is not the equivalent of purchasing it. But if that's the case, then why does the Braisa rule that the children are not obligated to return the ribis funds? Here it's different about Sabai ribis, because it's Gzeres HaKosov. What's Gzeres HaKosov? Al tikach me'ito neshech v'tarbis. So the pasuk says, you shall not take from him. This is talking from the lender to the creditor. You shall not take from him neshech v'tarbis, ribis. You shall not take from him interest. So the Gemara says, ahadr le kiechi dinochi badach. Remember, the pasuk ends by saying, v'chai achicha imach. Don't do this, meaning don't take interest, and allow your brother to live with you. So the Gemara understands, when is there an obligation to return the ribis? When ultimately, again, the lender could fulfill the obligation of v'chai achicha imach. But if the, meaning so, the lender who took the money would now have an obligation to return the money in order to sustain his brother. But the Gemara understands, ahadale, return the money, why? Kihechi dinachi ba'adach, in order that the borrower could live with you. In other words, that the obligation to return ribis money is dafka an obligation on the lender and not an obligation on the heirs. So the Gemara says, lididi kamiz daher le'rachmana. Libre lo mizhar le'rachmana. So ultimately the Torah tells the lender that if he collects ribis money, he has to go ahead and return it. But the Torah does not obligate the son of the ribis lender to go ahead and return the money. So we'll say, interestingly enough, the machlokes of Rami Bar Chama and Rava is, they don't argue on the bottom line. The bottom line is the same, which is that if Reuven lends money with interest, collects that money, he now has interest money, illegal funds, in his bank account, he dies, everyone agrees that what? His children don't have to return the ribis money. They don't have to return it. The machlokes is why. Rami Bar Chama seems to say the reason is because Rishus Yoresh Ki Rishus Lokeach, when children inherit money, that's the equivalent of a purchase, and therefore they're not obligated to return it. Rava, on the other hand, says it's Gzeres HaKosov, it's a pasuk. The obligation to return interest funds is only a din for who? Only a din for the lender, not a din for the children. So says the Gemara, man de masnila brisa kol shekein masnisin. So we'll say the one who says Rami Baruch Hanan's statement is going on this brisa by ribis, all the more so will agree in a case of theft. All the more so will agree in a case of theft. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, man de masnila lahadrami Baruch Hanan brisa kol shekein masnisin. The leka time achrin la miftri ella hay kol kamadol mechsat. So we'll say, because remember again in the Mishnah, there's no other reason other than to say rushus yorish ki rushus lokeach that would not require the yorish to give it back. Aval, however, man de masnila recall aval man. I'm sorry, man de masnila masnisin. But the one who said Rami Baruch Hanan's statement is going on the Mishnah. Aval abraisa Rami Baruch Hanan kirava masnila. But I will say it could be that the reason why Rami Baruch Hanan holds that in the case of ribis there is no obligation to return the ribis funds might be because Rami Baruch Hanan actually holds like Rava. I will say, in other words, Rava's statement was one who said that you're right, the children don't have to return the ribis funds. Why? Because the maisa, again, the obligation to return ribis money is only upon the lender himself and not upon the heirs. Okay, so we'll say, so here's what we have. Everyone, so first of all, bottom line over here is everyone is agreeing that if children inherit ribis funds from their father, there is no obligation for them to return that money. That's what everybody is agreeing with. The machlokes is why? Why aren't they obligated to go out and return it? So two possibilities, either Rishus Yorish ki Rishus Lokeach or Gzeiras HaKosov. The other piece that the Gemara keeps bringing up over here is Rami Baruch Hanan's statement of Rishus Yorish ki Rishus Lokeach, that when someone inherits something, ultimately, again, it's as if they purchased it. Now, that's Rami Baruch Hanan's statement. We have not established whether or not that is a definitive statement. In other words, do we paskin that way or not? That still remains to be seen. Tam Rabbanan, what's another braisa? Hagozel umma'achil asbanov, p'tur amir l'shalim. So we'll say, if somebody goes ahead, Reuven steals an object, and what happens? He gives it to his children, and then he dies, p'tur amir l'shalim. Ultimately, again, the children are putter from paying back the object. Hiniach lifneim, Rabbo say, case number one assumes that the object is no longer in existence. So father stole it. Ultimately, again, go ahead and when it gave it to his children. Now father dies, item is no longer in existence. Children are not obligated to pay it back. However, hiniach lifneim, Rabbo say, if the thief father dies, the object is still in existence. Then what? Gidolim chayavim l'shalim. If the children are adults, they have to pay back the stolen object. Kitanim p'turim l'shalim. Ultimately, again, if the children are minors, they are not obligated. They are putter from paying it back. Ve'im amru gidolim ein anu yodim cheshbono shechasha v'avinu imach p'turim. But if the children were adults and they said, listen, we don't know what cheshbonos. We don't know what issues or what financial issues our father had with you. Meaning we don't know our father's estate, his finances, his issues. So you're claiming that our father stole this object. We don't know if that to be true. Therefore, they're putter from paying it back. To which the Gemara says, really? Mishum da amri ein anu yodin piturin. Because the children said, we don't know our father's financial details. They're going to be putter from paying back the object. Amarav ha'chikam. Rav said, this is what it means to say. Gedolim sha'amru. Yodim anu cheshbono shechashav avinu imach. Velo pash lecha gabe velo midi p'turin. But what it means to say is the following. If the father dies and leaves behind adult children, and someone claims that the father had a stolen object of theirs in his possession when he died, and the adult children say, we know the cheshbonos of our father, and our father has absolutely nothing to do with you, there's no stolen object over here, so the halacha is, the children are putter from paying back. Now, understand, that's not such a novelty. Why? Because Allah said, this is just the regular din of hamotzi mechaver alav haraya. In general, if you want to extract money from someone, the burden of proof is upon who? The burden of proof is upon the extractor. Say, Nachinami, if the thief shows up with witnesses, then of course the thief will be believed, but just his simple claim. So again, a simple claim will not be believed against the definitive claim of the Yershim who say, our father stole nothing from you. Tanya Idach, another braisa. Hagozal umma'achil banav p'turim l'shalim. Supposed to listen to this, or I should say, banav p'turim l'shalim. Someone goes ahead, Reuven steals an object, feeds it to his children, or uses it for his children, then dies. The children are potter from paying back the stolen object. Hiniach lifneim va'achlom. But we'll say, now listen to this case. In this case, so Reuven stole an object, and it was in existence when he died. He dies, then children use the object. So what's the halacha? Bein gedolim and bein ketanim chayavim. Whether the children are adults or minors, they're going to be obligated to go ahead and pay back the object, to which the Gemara says, ketanim, mi mechayvi, but are children ever financially liable to pay back something? Lo yehe ela de azik azuke. They both say, if let's say the father stole an object and left behind that stolen object, and then after the death of the father, the children consumed that object, that should be no different than if the children damaged someone. They both say, what's the halacha? What's the halacha if? Actually, it's an interesting shayla in general. If a child does damage, what is liability? So this, by the way, has incredible lemaisa ramifications. My kid's playing baseball and hits the ball through the neighbor's window. Does a parent have automatic halacha? So one thing is clear, which is, who's pater? The child. Right, that's for sure. Meaning, so even if the child has money of his own or things of his own, he's certainly put. Whether or not the parent is liable is a discussion halacha. In any event, so we'll say, so how can you say over here that if the father left the item to his minor children and they consumed it after the death of the father, that the children would be chayav to pay back? Meaning, when the children consumed that object, that should be no different than any case of hezek where the children do damage. And what's the halacha of a child does damage? He's pater. This is what it means to say. So let's listen to this. Here's the case. Father stole an object, died before the children consumed it, and then afterwards, the children did not yet consume it. So the item is still in existence in the estate. Bein gedolim, bein ketanim chayovim. Rabbi will say, whether the children are adults or minors, what's the halacha? The halacha is the object has to be returned. So what's that? The idea that the Gemara is teaching me is that if it's the stolen object is still in existence, if it still exists, so the Maisa, again, everyone will agree that the object itself has to be returned. The only the Shaila that comes up that we were dealing with is when the object has been consumed. Where is there a financial liability, which we pass in that there is not, but the Maisa, if the object itself is still in existence, whether the heirs are gedolim or ketanim, the object must be returned. Amr Rava, Rava said the following. This is another interesting case. Hiniach lemaviyam parash she'ula. So let's listen to this case. Reuven borrowed a cow. Reuven borrowed a cow from Shimon. And let's say for argument's sake, he borrowed it for 6 months. 2 months in, he died. So we'll say, so now, what is the shayla of, well, what is the status of that she'ilo? What is the status of that borrowing? So the Gemara Selling Mezi Rabba says, the heirs have the ability, Mishtam Shin Ba Kol Yimei She'ilasa. The children have the ability to use the cow for the duration of the She'ila period. So interestingly enough, the heirs inherit the right of the father to continue borrowing the cow for the previously agreed upon duration. Which Rabba says is a fascinating halacha. Why? Because it's telling you that she'ila, borrowing, is transferable. It's transferable. So even though, again, we would have said, and we'll see the counter to this, I would have thought to say, listen, if I lend Reuven an object, so who am I lending it to? I'm lending it to Reuven. Which Rabbi says, you know, the halacha is that if I borrow an object, I can't choose on my own to go ahead and lend that then to another person. That's aser. But yet, interestingly enough, when the Shoel dies, that right is transferred to his heirs to continue to borrow the item for the previously agreed upon duration. Mesa. Let's say the animal, now, Reuven, the borrower dies, his children are using the object, or the animal, let's say, and the animal died. Ein chayav in ba'onsa. So we'll say, interestingly enough, as much as the heirs inherit the right to go ahead and use the object, apparently they do not inherit the full liability to go ahead and they do not inherit the full liability. Therefore, remember, Shoel has a heightened level of responsibility. Shoel is pretty much chayiv for everything. So if, even if the animal dies, lemaisik, and the children are going to be potter. Kisvurim shalaviyemi. Let's listen to this. However, if the children thought that this was their father's animal, meaning, let's say, the case is the following. Reuven borrowed a cow. Reuven borrowed a cow from Shimon. Reuven died. So children have this cow. They thought the cow was their father's. They did not know that it was a borrowed cow. And what happens? So, v'tavchuha v'achluha, They slaughtered it and they ate it. So I say, so what are you, so now again, remember, this sounds like a case of what? This could be a case of tavach u'machar, right? This could be a case of a stolen object that was then slaughtered. So what's their liability? So the answer is, m'shamen d'mei basar b'zol. So I say, they have to pay back Shimon, because remember, at the end of the day, they slaughtered Shimon's animal, but they pay back the value of inexpensive meat. So they have to pay back, but we assess the payment again at the lowest possible threshold. Hiniach lema biim achrayes nechosim. But I will say, if their father left them, now in this context, hiniach lema achrayes nechosim means the father left them land. Chayavim l'shalim. They are obligated to pay back. Now I will say, now remember, just so you understand this is set up over here, there are two different cases over here. Case number one that Rava said is that in both cases, Reuven barred a cow before he died. Then Reuven dies. So the first thing that Rava teaches me is that number one, the heirs inherit the right to use the animal for the duration of the previously agreed upon she'ela, act of borrowing. That's number one. Then there were two cases. Case number one is that if the animal dies while in the possession of the heirs, they are not chayiv for the death of the animal. That's number one, as opposed to a regular shoalu is. Number two is if they inadvertently thought the animal belonged to their father, and they ended up slaughtering it, they only have to pay the value of meat, cheap meat, right? The cheapest meat that you could buy on the market. Fine. So says the Gemara, then the Braisa says, but if their father left for them real property, they're obligated to pay. Shaila is, what does that statement go on? If their father left them property, they're obligated to pay, what does that go on? So some say what it means is the following, that in the event that the animal died, if the father left them real property, they are obligated to make the owner of the animal whole. Others say, no, what it means is that if they went ahead and they accidentally slaughtered it, that they would be obligated to, and their father left them real property, they'd be obligated to pay for the slaughtering of the animal from real property. So, So the one who sets this up, that phrase is talking about the Reisha, will certainly agree that it applies to the Seifa as well, but yet they will argue on Rav Papa. So we'll discuss the Shita of Rav Papa in just a moment. But the one who says that it applies to the Seifa, Avala Reisha, lo. But ultimately, again, it will not apply to the first case. And this will reflect the view of Rav Papa, because what did Rav Papa say? Dam Rav Papa, Haisa para genuva lo. So let's listen to this case. Because Rav Papa said, if a person had stolen a cow, v'tavcha b'shabbes chayiv. So let's listen to this. So Reuven steals a cow on Thursday, and he slaughters it on Shabbos. So what's the halacha? Chayiv. So I will say, he will be chayiv ultimately again. He will be chayiv for the act, meaning he'll be chayiv monetarily, for the act of slaughtering on Shabbos. Why? Shekvar chayiv b'gneva kodim shiyavo lidei isu Shabbos. So I will say, remember again, so we know the concept of kimle b'drab mine, which means that you cannot incur two simultaneous liabilities when one of those liabilities is a death penalty. So Rav Papa says over here that in this case, where he stole on Thursday and slaughtered on Shabbos, there's no kimle b'drab mine. Why? Because the real liability for theft already occurred when? Already occurred on Thursday, right? So whenever, before Shabbos, when you went ahead and you stole the item. So we'll say, take a look at Rashi. Rashi says over here, Haisa parasa shulo, let me read, that's the next case. Look at the previous Rashi. V'ayinu d'ra papa d'amra haisa para genuva lo, kilomar ganav para me'erev Shabbos, v'tavach b'shabbos, so I stole it on Erev Shabbos, and now I'm slaughtering it on Shabbos, chayiv af pitash lubin arba v'chamisha. I'm chayiv even for the 4 and 5 time penalty payment of slaughtering it on Shabbos, sharin is chayiv b'keren, kodim shiyavo lidei isur skila. Because I was already chayiv for the principal, meaning on Friday, before I'm chayiv skila for slaughtering on Shabbos, va'af agav dikunasalo asyele ad Shabbos, and even the Rabbosai, the penalty payments for 4 and 5 times only comes when? On Shabbos itself at the time of Shrita. Nevertheless, lo patrina le miknasa mishum chiyuv misa. Rabbosai, this is actually very important. So what Rav Papa says is the following. The concept of kinlein b'drabimine says that when you are chayiv keren, principal, as well as death penalty, you can't be chayiv both. You get the death penalty, you're potter from the financial payment. Kinlein b'drabimine, however, only applies to payments of mamon, of money, but does not apply to payments of knas, penalty payments. You can be chayiv for knas and misa at the same time. Therefore, in this case over here, Reuven stole on Erev Shabbos. He's chayiv ultimately again the mamon on Erev Shabbos. And then at the time when he shechts on Shabbos, again, it's going to be chayiv again. Why? Because for the knas of dalet b'chamisha, because kim ramini does not apply to knas. On the other hand, on the other hand, if he had a borrowed ox in his, a borrowed cow in his possession, and he slaughtered it on Shabbos, Potter. Rabosai, in that case, he will be Potter. Why? She'eser Shabbos, ve'eser Geneva, bo'in ke'echod. Because Rabosai, in that case over here, the Isser Shabbos and Isser Geneva occur simultaneously. Because remember, again, it's only at the time when what? It's only at the time when he goes ahead and steals the object. It's only at the time when he steals, excuse me, only at the time when he slaughters the object that the act of theft has actually occurred. So the Rabbi said, look just a moment. Ha'isa parashu ulo v'tavcha b'shabbos minakol. Delo amrina misha'as she'ila mechayiv le'akarna. So we'll say the idea over here is, because according to Rav Papa, we don't say that a shoel becomes chayiv for the Karen at the time that he borrowed it. Therefore, again, v'kama birshu seafi l'malach amavet el b'shas tevichohu digzela v'esher Shabbos u'gneiv b'ayin ke'echad v'niftar min ha'keren mishum dekimlei medrabi minei u'knasa leka. So we'll say, fine. So that's right, Papa. So therefore, again, we'll say, so in this, just an interesting distinction, by the way, just kimlei medrabi minei. According to our Papa, which we actually learned this earlier, kimlei medrabi minei only applies where there's a simultaneous liability for mamon and misa. Therefore, you can't be chayiv mamon and misa both. Rather, misa trumps the mamon. If on the other hand, but it's if it's mamon and excuse me, if it's misa and knas, you can be simultaneously chayiv for misa and knas at the same time. Fine. Tan rabban. The heishav is akzela sher gazal. The pasuk says, "You shall return the stolen object which you stole." Not tam lomar asher gazal. Why does the pasuk have to say asher gazal that you stole? Yachzir kein sher gazal. Well, it teaches me that what, that you should return the object in the same way that you stole it. We'll say, what does that mean? So remember, that could mean a couple of things. Mikan amru, so we'll say, first of all, the way we used this before is, number one, if the object is still in existence, then what? Then what? Give back the object. And number two, in the event that the object is not in existence, we evaluate the gezel based on what? The value of the object at the time it was stolen. But there's another piece. Mikan amru, hagozel umma'achil as banav pturim. We'll say, we also learn from here that what? That if Reuven stole an object and gave it to his children, ultimately, pturim l'shalim, the children are potter from paying it back. Hiniach lifneyem, bein gedolim bein ketanim. But I will say, if, when the father died, the object is still in existence, the children are in possession of the stolen object itself, then, bein gedolim bein ketanim chayovim. Then ultimately, again, the children, whether they are adults or minors, are obligated to go ahead and give back the object. However, mishum sumchos amru, but in the name of sumchos they said, gedolim chayavim, adult children are obligated to return it, ketanim peturim, but ultimately, I should say adult children, adult heirs are obligated to return the object, but minors are not. So we'll say, listen to this. So that's the position of sumchos. Sumchos, Rabbi said, because this has to do with the fact that sumchos feels when it comes to ketanim, you can't litigate anything with ketanim. So because you can't litigate anything with ketanim, it's impossible to extract anything from them. So, and that is true according to sumchos, even if the stolen object itself is literally still in existence. If they're gedolim, you can get it back from gedolim. If they're ketanim, then ultimately again, you cannot. So says the Gemara, Bosa Tegmar tells a Maisa. Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiya, Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiya. So we'll say Bar Chamua de Rabbi Yirmiya means the son of the father-in-law of Rabbi Yirmiya, which is his brother-in-law. So we'll say, so the case over here is like this. So Rabbi Yirmiya's father-in-law died. Okay, so listen to this case. Tarak Gali Ba'ape de Rabbi Yirmiya. So we'll say, Rabbi Yirmiya, apparently there was a piece of property of his father-in-law that Rabbi Yirmiya claimed that his father-in-law had either gifted him or had sold to him prior to his death. After the death of the father, after the death of the father, Rabbi Yirmiya wants to walk into the property to take possession. What happened? Tarak Gali Ba'ape. His brother-in-law slammed the door in Rabbi Yirmiya's face and would not let him into the house. In other words, so the brother-in-law, and Rashi points out over here, Baruch Mod Rabbi Yirmiyah, Katan Hava. The brother-in-law, who was the heir of the now deceased father, was a Katan. He slammed the door on Rabbi Yirmiyah's face and would not let Rabbi Yirmiyah in the house. Okay? Which was another way of saying, it's not yours. It belongs to me. All right. So what happens? Rabbi Yirmiyah went to Rabbi Avin. Amar, Shalohu. Shalohu Tovea. So Rabbi Avin said, listen, what do you want? Your brother-in-law, meaning the heir, is claiming that this property belongs to him. Amarle, Vahamai Sina Sahadi Da'ach Siki Bey Bechayedavua. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, look, I could bring witnesses that I had a chazaka on it, or that I made a chazaka on it in the years my father was alive. In other words, that this transaction took place years ago. So I could bring witnesses that show that I already made a chazaka, my father was still alive. So Amarle, Vichi Mekablin Edim, we'll say Amadeis. So let's say here we have an interesting problem. Do we accept edus not in the face of the litigant? In other words, we'll say in this case over here, what we're saying is, in this case, remember, the father-in-law, which was the supposed seller, Rabbi Yirmiyah, died. So do we accept edus not in the presence of the Baldin? Look at Rashi, Shalom Bifnei Baldin. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is an interesting technical issue. Rabbi Yirmiyah, you want to go ahead and bring edus that you in fact bought and made a chazaka on this property while your father-in-law was still alive. There's only one problem. Your father-in-law is dead. So will we accept testimony of witnesses when they don't have to testify in the presence of the Baldin? Or as we'll say, it appears that one of the fail-safes we have in ensuring that witnesses testify correctly and truthfully is that they have to give over their testimony in the presence of the Baldin, in the presence of the litigants. So even if I'm going to lie, it's much easier for a person to tell a lie not in the presence of others than it is to tell in the presence of others. So will we accept the testimony of the witnesses you want to bring, knowing that your father-in-law is already dead? V'ha'katani, we learned. Ben Gedolim, Ben Ketanim, Chayovin. But there's another issue. We already learned that Lamais, again, if there's stolen property in the estate, whether the heirs are adults or minors, they're obligated to return it. Armalei, to which he responded, Hari Machlokes, Sumchus Betzidach. So one second. First of all, we know it's a Machlokes, and I also remember the position of Sumchus. Sumchus is of the position that what? Only adult heirs are obligated to return a stolen object that is in existence, but minor heirs are not. Amr, so Rabbi Yirmiyah says, Ich bau kuli alba v'kai ke Sumchus, laf kuan didi. Suddenly everyone holds like Sumchus. In other words, Sumchus, Rabbi Yirmiyah, remember, Sumchus is a das yochus. Sumchus is arguing against the Rabbanon. The Pashtus, again, the halacha goes like the majority, which would be the Rabbanon and not Sumchus. But suddenly now, so Rabbi Yirmiyah feels a little bit ganged up upon. Says, so suddenly everyone holds like Sumchus in order to go ahead and extract this property from me. Adhochi, Igalgal Milsa. We'll say, so interestingly enough, this episode of Rabbi Yirmiyah and his brother kind of got some public attention. Igalgal Misa means the matter escalated. Asa umata lekame Rabbi Avo. Until it finally came to Rabbi Avo's attention. Amar, Rabbi Avo said, Lo shmir lechu. Had Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Amar Rav Yoshia, did you not hear about what Rav Yosef Bar Chama said in Rav Yoshia? Then Rav Yosef Bar Chama, Amar Rav Yoshia, Tinok Shetakov Ba'avadav, V'yarad L'soch Sadei Shel Chaveiro, V'amar Shelihu. So let's listen to this. If a child, a minor, took his servants, Shetakov Ba'avadav, Rashi says, Shalakach Avadav Imoshi Sayuhu. So he took his Avadim with him to help him out. And what do? They go into the field of another person. And I will say, they take possession of the field. They make a chazak on the field, the amr shalihu, and the miner claims that ultimately, again, this is his field. Ein omrim namtin ad sheyigdal. I will say, we don't say, well, look, you know what? The miner claimed the field, and what? We don't take things out of the possession of a miner, so let's wait until he grows up, and we'll adjudicate the case then. We don't say that. Ella, motzien oso miad. Rather, we take it away from the miner immediately. And what happens? And when the miner gets older, if the field is really his, let him bring witnesses to the field. This is. So also, what do you see from here? You see from here that we do extract things from a miner, to which the Gemara says, come on, you can't compare those cases. The Gemara says, venira, me, dummy, how can you compare these cases? Hasam hu timafkinan minei delo kaimale achazaka davuha. So we'll say in that case where the miner takes his father's avadim, goes and lays claim to land, that we have no reason to assume that land was his. There's no his, he has no previous relationship with that land, and therefore we take it away from him. Aval hecha de isle chazaka davuha lo. But we'll say in a case where the child did have chazaka from the land. In other words, in a case where we know that land did belong to the father, and what? And what? And now the child, the heir, is in possession of that land, that lemais again will be in that kind of case when we would not extract from the minor. So we'll say, now, what the Gemara just introduced us to is the following yisod. So now, so we still have the ongoing machlokas as to whether or not we extract property from minors. The Rabbanon say yes, if the stolen object is still in existence, we will extract it even from minors. Sumcha saying from adult heirs we will, but from minor heirs we will not. But now the Gemara introduced another dynamic, which is accepting testimony not in the presence of the litigants. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Rav Shabbosai, Mekablin Eidun Shelo Bifnei Baal Din. So Rav Ashi and Rav Shabbosai, you could accept testimony not in the presence of the litigants. Then I will say, now when we say litigants, specifically who are we referring to? Specifically who? The defendant. Right? That's really who we're talking about over here. So again, so Rav Shabbosai said that you can go ahead and accept testimony not in the presence of the defendant, of the litigant. So says the Gemara, Tayi bar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan pondered this and he said, is that true that we would accept testimony not in the presence of the litigants? Kibla minei Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, kegon shahaya hu chola, o edav cholim. So we'll say, I'll tell you where a case would be where we would accept testimony, Rabbi Yossi, not in the presence of the defendant. That would be, for example, in a case where the toid. Remember in halacha. So just to get our. So we have a plaintiff and a defendant. In halacha, we call that a toin and a nitan. So the toin is the plaintiff, the one who is lodging the complaint. And the nitan is the defendant, the one who's on the defendant. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hanina said, you know what? Under normal circumstances, we don't accept testimony not in the presence of the defendant, but there will be certain exceptions. Kigon, shahaya hu chola. For example, Rabbi Yosef, if the plaintiff was ill and therefore could not travel, o edav cholim, or the witnesses are ill and they can't travel, o shahayu edav mevakshin leilech lemedina sayam. Or Rabbi Yosef, in a case where what? Where the witnesses need to go overseas. And in these cases, v'sholchu lo, they sent a message to the defendant to please come. In other words, there are so many circumstances here. You need to come to a different location for this case. V'lo ba, and he did not come. So we'll say, if the defendant did not comply with the request of the Beis Din, and again, there are these extenuating circumstances. The plaintiff is sick, the witnesses are sick, they're going overseas. Then Lamaisa, we will accept testimony even not in the presence of the defendant. You could accept testimony not in the presence of the litigants. Armar Ukva, Lididima Farshlemin di Shmuel. So Ukva said, the way I understood Shmuel's statement was the following. Kigom de paschu le bidine. So as we're talking about a case over here, paschu le bidine means that the plaintiff and the litigant already gave their statements. Vishalchu le velo asa. And I will say what happens after they gave their statements. Now the witnesses come. And Beis Din sent a message to the defendant to say, listen, if you want, show up, come to Beis Din because we're about to get testimony from the witnesses. And what happens? Velo asa. And the defendant didn't come. So we'll say in a case like that, where plaintiff and defendant already gave their statements to Beis Din, and now Beis Din is interviewing the witnesses, Beis Din invited or asked the defendant to come. The defendant said no. That circumstance will listen to Eidos even not in the presence of the defendant. But we'll say, if the defendant and the plaintiff did not yet give their original statements, they did not yet begin the court case, matzi amrale anul Beis Din agadal zilma. So we'll say, then the defendant has the right to say, look, I'm not submitting to this Beis Din. I want to take my case to the high court in Yerushalayim. Ihachi, ki paskuli nami matzi amrale le Beis Din agadal zilma. But we'll say, even so, even if they gave their statements, why can't the defendant say, well, I want this case to be heard in the Beis Din agadal? Because the way we're setting up the case, I will say, is where he has a document. Meaning he tried to go to the Beis Din HaGadol, and the Beis Din HaGadol told him that he must have this case adjudicated by the local Beis Din. Fine. Amarath, Mekaimin es Hashtar Shlo Bifnei Baal Din. Also another interesting case. Also we learned this before about Kiyum Shtaris. Kiyum Shtaris means the following. I lend Reuven money. And what happens? I have a document that details that loan. So I will say, the issue whenever you lend someone money is that even if you have a document, you could show up to Bezin and someone could contest the authenticity of the document. There's something called Kiyum Shtars. Kiyum Shtars is a mechanism by which essentially you authenticate a shtar. How do you authenticate the shtar? So the simplest way is, you bring the shtar to Bezin. Bezin calls in the witnesses, says, witnesses, is that your signature? Witnesses say yes. Bezin write, they authenticate the shtar on the shtar itself. So they'll sign it. They'll say, we authenticate this shtar as being absolutely valid. And therefore, they'll say, now, the Maila of Kiyum Shtaros is what? The Maila of Kiyum Shtaros is that even if, see, here's the big problem with shtars in general. If you have a shtar, even if there are signatures of witnesses on it, people could still technically challenge the authenticity of the shtar. And that's fine, as long as the witnesses are somewhat local, that they could be called in to authenticate their signatures. If the witness is going to go overseas, you get into big problems. That's why people would use the mechanism of Kiyum Shtaros, because it authenticates the shtar already now. So that should it be contested in the future, it's already good to go. So Rav said, we could go to Mekayim Shtar, you could do Kiyum Shtaros, even not in the presence of the Baal Din. So we'll say, for example, if there's a case where I went ahead and I lent Reuven money, so I have a shtar, so now Rav is saying, I could do Kiyum Shtaros, even if I don't call in Reuven, even without having the borrower present. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Emekayim Sheshla B'nei Baal Din. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, you can't do Kiyum Shtaros without the presence of the borrower, of the borrower slash defendant. To the borrower. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Sheshes Rav Yossi. So Rav Sheshes says, Rav Yossi, excuse me, Amar Rav Sheshes Rav Yossi, Baravau, Azbra Lecha Taimei, Rav Yochanan, I'll tell you Rav Yochanan's logic. So we'll say, why is Rav Yochanan says that you can't do Kiyum Shtaros without the presence of the buyer? Amar Kra, because the Pasuk says, V'huad Bivalov, V'lo Yishmerenu. The Pasuk says, we're also talking about taking us back to the beginning of Baba Kama, right? That you warned the owner, and the owner did not properly watch the animal. Amra Torah, the Torah said, Yavo Bal Hashar, V'ya'amod Al Shoro, Da'alacha Rabosai is that when Bezin adjudicates the case, the Bal Hashar must be present. So Rabbi Yochanan says, just like the Bal Hashar must be present in this case, so to every single time something is being claimed against someone, the defendant must always be present for the proceedings. Therefore, again, in this case of Kiyum Shtaros, if you're going to authenticate this shtar, the borrower has to be there to give him the opportunity to perhaps again dispute the shtar in its entirety. Amar Rav, Rav said, Hilchasa, so I'll say, Rava said, the halacha is, you could do Kiyum Shtaros even not in the presence of the borrower. Va'afilu, omeid v'tzavach. I will say, even if the borrower, so I'll say, imagine this case. So now, I lent Reuven money, I'm bringing my shtar for authentication to the Beis Din. I could do that even if Reuven, the borrower, is not there. And even if Reuven is there, and Reuven is jumping up and down, he's crying out, I didn't borrow, this never happened. V'amar, Nikitu Lizimna Adamaisina Sadi Murana Lishtara. So let's say Reuven's there, he hears about the Kiyum Shtaros, he shows up at Beis Din, and he says, look, before you authenticate the shtar, give me some time to get my witnesses to show that this is a fraudulent transaction. This never happened. I never borrowed money. So what happens? So Naktina, I'm sorry, Umarana Lishtar, Naktina Le. I asa. Ilo asa natrinan le, excuse me, natrinan le bahab. So let's listen to this. So let me actually go back. So natrina le. So let's say, so we give him the time. So if Reuven says, I need a little bit of time to bring witnesses to show that this shtar is fraudulent, we give him the time. I asa, if he's able to bring the witnesses, great. Ilo asa, if he does not go ahead and bring the witnesses. Natrinan le bahab. We give him, we'll say, a bahab, a Monday, Thursday, and a Monday to go ahead and track down the witnesses. Ilo asa, and I will say, if he does not go ahead and bring the witnesses, then what? Kasvinon le psicha iluya tishin yomin. So I will say, in this case over here, if Reuven says, listen, I have a counterclaim, this transaction is fraudulent, you need to give me time to go ahead and bring witnesses. We give him a bahab. So we give him a Monday, Thursday, and a Monday to go ahead and bring his witnesses. If he does not bring the witnesses, we write a psicha against him. What's a Rashi? A psicha? Shtar shamta shem porecho. We write a document of excommunication against him because he is a person who does not pay his debts. But listen to this. And that document of excommunication is for 90 days. Now, tlosin kamoi lo nachtin l'nechasei, for the first 30 days of the 90, we will not go and seize his property. This is the property of the borrower. We won't seize his property. Why? Da'amar, katarach bezuziv enizov. Because we're assuming that during the first 30 days, maybe he's trying to borrow money from others in order to pay back the lender. Mitziyai nami lo nachtin l'nechasei. For the next 30 days. This is now, so for 1 through 30, we're not going to seize his property because we're assuming he's trying to borrow money. From 31 through 60, we're also not going to go ahead and seize his property. Why? Because the Amr Dimolo Ashkach Lamezav Akatarach Mizabin. Now, maybe he couldn't find any money to borrow, so he's busy selling off his property. Basrai Namilo Nachtil Nechase. So we'll say from 61 to 90, we're also not going to seize his property. Why? The Amr Lokeach Gufei Katarach Bezuzi. Because maybe he was able to sell the property, but the person to whom he's selling the property doesn't have liquid assets, and therefore is trying to secure the cash in order to go ahead and purchase the property. But however, Lo Asa. But Abbas said, at the end of the day, after 90 days, if the borrower has either not come back to Beis Din or has not furnished witnesses that show that the transaction is fraudulent, then kasvinan ad karta anachase. Then we give the lender a document that allows him to collect from the property of the borrower. V'hanimili da'amar asino. Rabbi say, this is all assuming where the borrower told us, I'm going to bring proof that the transaction is fraudulent, and then I'm going to come to Beis Din. Aval amar lo asino. Rabbi say, if let's say the borrower says, I refuse to engage in these proceedings, then the Gemara says, then la'alter kasinon. Then Rabbi say, we go ahead and we give the lender a document that entitles him to collect from the property of the borrower immediately. V'hanimili b'milva. And I'll say all of this that we give the borrower 90 days is only in a case of hava, only in a case of loan. Ava pikadon la'alter kasvinon. Rabbi says, actually very interesting. But by pikadon, we give the owner of the object the ability to collect immediately. Now, Rabbi says, this is actually very interesting. Why this distinction? Because Rabbi says, we understand how, like, milva la'otzan, that when you lend someone money, so the understanding is that their right is what? To spend that money. So I understand if somebody says, I don't yet have the funds, they need a little bit of time to be able to get repayment. By pikadon, Rabbi says, when I deposit an object with someone, then what? Do they have any rights of usage of that object? No. And therefore, again, when I call it, they've got to give it back. If they don't have it, Rabbi says, that means something's going on. And therefore, again, Beis Din will give the owner of the object the right to collect immediately. Dechi kasvinan. And I will say, furthermore, when we write a document of collection from the lender to the borrower, that we give the lender the right to collect from the property of the borrower, that's only on the kakoi. That's only on the property, the real property of the borrower. Aval metaltali lo. But Rabbi says, at the end of the day, we don't allow a lender to go ahead and collect from movable property of the borrower. Why? Listen to this. Dilma shamit va'achuluhu milva lamataltali. Because it will say, it could be that the lova will go ahead and, excuse me, the malva, the lender, will go and collect movable property, use up the movable property of the borrower. V'chi asi lova maisi sahadu marli l'shtara lo mashkach midi l'migba. And I will say, what might happen? If it turns out that the borrower really does bring witnesses to say that the loan was fraudulent, what's happened in the interim? The malva has already consumed all of the metaltalin of the lova, and the lova is stuck. Therefore, we only allow the malva to collect from real property, which in the event that the lova is able to prove that the loan was fraudulent, then what? Then the lova could go back and re-seize the real property that was taken by the malva. The isle mekarki lemalva kasvinan. And I will say, at the end of the day, however, if the malva himself also has real property, we'll let him even collect metaltalin from the lova. Why? Because if it turns out that the loan was fraudulent and the malva inappropriately took the metaltalin of the lova, that the lova could always seize the real property of the malva to satisfy the debt. Velohi. Now, the Gemara says, it's not really true. At karta metaltalin lo kasvinan, at the end of the day, we never really allow our borrower to collect real property, to collect metaltalin. Why? Afagav the ispe mekarkoi, even though the malva has real property. Why? Chayshinan shema tachsif. because the Bosei were concerned that even if the Malva has real property, perhaps his property will depreciate, and he will not have enough property to pay back for the metalkalin ultimately that he took for the Lova. All right, the Bosei, we'll stop over here. We'll pick up right here tomorrow, B'chi Kasina and Karta. So again, what's fascinating about this over here is the Gemara is just giving us the mechanisms ultimately for collection of the debts. So we'll continue in this process of collection, as well as timelines in Mirat Hashem tomorrow.